since I've been almost prompted to share a story. So I might as well start from that. Subject is new creation. There is a story in the Bhagavad Purana which describes something very beautiful. And I am reminded of that especially because Nilkanth Bhai just mentioned about the Rat Ki Rani Parijat. As we know, it is known as aspiration. Mother gave it the name aspiration. And it blooms at night and drops to the ground and it has flames pointing upward. Such a symbol. Incidentally, it also attracts snakes, which is another symbol. But coming to the story, maybe many of us are aware how the Parijat tree came into existence from the Indian mystic story point of view. So the story goes that there is this demon who has conquered several places, and he has captured many of the women as the booty and got them and locked them in his Patal Lok, in his kingdom, which is in the subconscious regions. And Shri Krishna, they call to him, and Shri Krishna goes along with Satyabhama. This story is very fascinating in every aspect of it. Satyabhama is none else but the daughter of Earth. She or the incarnation of Bhudevi. She is Earth. And Shri Krishna is the divine avatar. So both of them go and they fight this demon, and eventually, with the help of Satyabhama, it is very interesting, he can't be killed without Satyabhama's help, Bhudevi. And together they strike the arrows, and eventually he dies, and all the 16,000 apparently queens are released and they are wedded to Krishna. That's the story, incidentally, of the 16,000 queens of Krishna. We'll touch upon the symbol little later. Now, while he is returning, Satyabhama takes fancy to the Parijat tree which is blooming in heaven. It is in Indra's garden, it is blooming. So she says, I want this for earth. And Shri Krishna asks the gods to give it for earth, but gods don't want to. They zealously want to guard the treasure. So they don't want this tree to come to earth. And so they fight with Krishna. The result is obvious. And ultimately, Indra and all the gods concede and they give the Parijat tree. So Parijat tree is brought to earth. The story doesn't end there. It is planted in Satyabhama's garden, because Satyabhama is the one who requested. But as you know, that Shri Krishna also has another consort, Rukmani, who is the incarnation of Lakshmi. His real consort as far as the Vishnu avatar is concerned. So she also wants it. So what is the solution? Because there is only one sapling. It has been planted in Satyabhama's garden. He can't uproot it and give it to her. But Rukmani wants that tree. He says, don't worry. Shri Krishna has a way, and a very charming way. He says, don't worry, it will be rooted here. But when the tree grows, the flowers will fall on your garden. So she is happy and both are happy. Now the story is deeply symbolic and mystical, as we know, that Satyabhama is earth and the divine. They must come together. And what is that battle? They release 16,000. These are energies of earth, the feminine energies which are operating in this creation in so many ways. And all these energies have been locked up by the Asura, meaning thereby they've been diverted by man towards the, or rather they've been misused. These energies are being misused for Asuric, for demonic, for egoistic purposes. So first step is to release them. So he releases. But release is not enough. They must be wedded to the divine. They may be released, but again they will go back. So they must be wedded to the divine. So they marry Shri Krishna. And then when this basic work has been done, then we remember a line from Savitri. a branch of heaven transplant to human soil. See this line, this whole story. And nature shall overleap her mortal step. And when this will happen? In death's tremendous hour. So that branch is brought and put here upon earth. But see, very interesting, Satyabhama is Bhudevi. So it's planted on earth. When does it blossom? And where does it blossom? It blossoms in heaven. Rukmani is none else but Goddess Lakshmi. This story in a way is significant, symbolic of a previous effort by the avatar to plant human aspiration upon earth to reclaim the Godhead. When we read Sri Aurobindo, the Life Divine, we are reading it nowadays. So we owe origin to there that our psychic beings, rather the central being, the Jivatma, its origin is in the supermind. And man himself, which is the embodiment, its origin is on the borders of the overmind. That's how the mother describes. And we have come here, fallen here, taken into ourselves the earth nature, and it has to be redeemed. So first step in that redemption is the divine does, he battles with the dark forces, asuric forces, demonic forces, releases those energies which have been darkened by misuse, and integrated with the new life by turning them toward the divine. In some way or the other, all of us carry in us something of these energies which have been darkened by, contact and contamination, deeper contagion, much deeper contamination than the virus and other things. And gardens remind me always that the worst contamination that ever can be on earth is human. But yet, the beauty of human is, though he is the most fragile, he carries in himself the seed of something most beautiful and divine. So, Bhudevi, earth, something of earth nature is also in us, and something of the divine element is in us. So, all these energies have to be conquered back and turned towards the divine, integrated with the divine. First step of the process. So, we have to turn ourselves, orient ourselves, reorient. And keep orienting ourselves to the divine. All the movements, all the 16,000 or whatever number, they have to be turned toward the divine. This is the first step. Then again, he does the second part. He brings the and plants it. So what is that part? The aspiration. Sri Aurobindo has planted a completely new aspiration. It's so beautifully described in Savitri. The ideal must be his natural home. A conscious soul live in a conscious world. Before Sri Aurobindo, the aspiration was, well, I'm speaking of aspiration, not the desire part, but aspiration was at the most moksha. Bhaj Govindam, Bhaj Govindam, Bhaj Govindam, Moodamate. This was the aspiration. Highest aspiration of man was that ultimately. But what was behind it? Was always the aspiration that world should become perfect. So why did people seek it? Because they felt there is no way. Science had tried, industry had tried, sadhus had tried, saints had tried, and they could make a few people ultimately turn towards something beautiful. So ultimately this aspiration took the form that we can't realize it here, but perhaps there is a heaven beyond where it can be realized. So the aspiration turned beyond earth. We can't realize the dream of a perfect life, perfect commune living, community living, perfect love, perfect bliss, perfect knowledge, etc., etc. But there is a domain where it is possible. So man turned toward the beyond, and then the moksha and all this started. Now Sri Aurobindo has planted this new aspiration in death's tremendous hour. When the dance of death was going on, First World War, Second World War, and subsequently he has planted it upon earth. Now, this he has planted, the new creation, they have planted. But, see, very interesting, here again, both Sri Krishna coming as Sri Aurobindo and the Divine Mother identifying herself with Mother Earth. See, time and again she has identified with Mother Earth. All her prayers are in that identification. Together they bring the supermind and they planted it upon earth in earthly soil, the manifestation part. But it's not that suddenly tomorrow we'll get flowers. One of the first things that flowers teach us, that prepare the soil. Is our soil ready for the divine, for the plantation of the beauty that the divine has brought to earth? So there is a long period when soil is being tilled. And we see a lot happening today is tilling of the soil. If the soil is not well tilled, you can't plant anything there. So there are three kinds of soil. This is from the New Testament and I love this story. Christ is asked that, why you are, you know, going all around speaking about such beautiful things? Do you think people are even interested? I see them, they come, listen and go away. He says, I know that, but I am like a farmer and I throw seeds all over. Some soils are too soft and nothing will grow there. I know. They will come here, there, everywhere. And at the end, nothing really will grow. Some soils are so hard that again nothing will grow. They won't even catch the seed. The hard intellectual lid. That also. There are some, very few, whose soil is ready and the seed will go. But as it grows, weeds will take over it. Again, out of these where it is beginning to grow, one odd out of 1,000 will actually make it. You're reminded of the verse of the Gita, Manushya Naam Sahasreno. So this is the way it operates. Preparing the soil itself, if we are very hard, especially we become hard when we become mind-centric. This is the civilizational problem today. Heart has been completely suppressed. It's been taught to love is a sin or a mistake or whatever else. And I agree that love is a power that can take you God knows where, because it's tremendous power. But does it mean that one should become hard? No, on the contrary, it is the power of transformation. If it is nurtured and turned toward the divine, it is the power of transformation. The mother has said the power of transformation is love. It's the energy of love. So this brings softness in nature. This makes the soil ready. So first thing is making the soil. Or if it is too soft. Too soft is, yes sir, yes sir, yes sir. To everybody you say yes sir. And then you have to run away because you can't fulfill all the yeses. This is also too softed soil. Taking everything in, I think I can be frank. I read Sri Aurobindo, then read Acharya Rajneesh, and read this and read that, and everything has gone in. This is a nice khichdi which is brewing in the end. Contrary pulls, contradictory ideas, and this is considered, by the way, today as wideness. It is the wideness of the waste paper basket where you throw everything pell-mell. True whiteness is the sky. Every star in its right place. If you move one star out of place by fancy, see what devastating, the whole universe will collapse because everything is interconnected. So the wideness of the sky and the wideness of the waste paper basket are two very different things. So we have to make the soil ready, neither too soft nor too hard. But then as this new creation begins to come, before it has to blossom, lot of, you know, all plants, whether you do organic farming or inorganic farming, I don't know what other way. But you have to put something which looks like it's waste or toxin. And you have to put into the earth. Even organic farming through earthworm, vermiculture and all, they turn the soil, their waste, something like that goes into the plant. So that waste is utilized. Good lesson for all of us. Nothing is a waste. Life is constant lesson. And what do the plants do? They are in darkness. Whatever is thrown into them, they turn it into sap of life. There is a very beautiful one-line definition of divine life in one of the aphorisms of Sri Aurobindo. To turn all things to honey is the secret of divine life. All things, whatever is put by the world, thank you for putting this. Take it and turn it into sap. That's the art that flowers teach us. They don't shrink. They say, oh my God, what is this? I did a big mistake. They don't complain. They know where they have to go. They are drawn by the sun even in the darkness. And then they come out. And what happens when they come out? They have only one thing. Open to the sun, be attracted to the sun. How are we going to have a new creation? By opening to the mother and being attracted to the mother. All other things are distractions. Debates, discussions, through which we want to establish new creation. That, I love that story of yours. Of see how the divine gives a different. And in the story I see something very interesting. The mother has spoken about sharing the bananas with all. First step is that it brings the spirit of collaborating in a totality. But there is another secret in it. The other secret is that when we don't throw away possibility but try to nurture it in whatever way, we will be given the means. There is a very beautiful thing that Sri Aurobindo writes. Even if you don't have means, still you must act. By action, the means increase. If we act in the right spirit, with the right attitude, nature, Mother Earth, the Divine Mother, she will give the means. This is the story of creation. And if we don't act rightly, the means, whether it be money or whether it be water, it will eventually go away. So if we feel the resources are less, we have to look inside and see perhaps something is not right within. And if I correct it, then means will come, because they don't come because I want. There's no random play happening here. There's nothing like a random, by chance it happened. No, things come when we need it in the true sense and when we utilize it in the true sense. And there's the other part of the story, that what is the hunger? So if we really need the divine, if we really need the new creation, if we are ready to embrace it, everything that is needed to help us will come. That is a divine assurance. People start looking at it differently. They feel if the means are not coming, therefore the dream has failed. Never have I heard a more stupid statement. It means I don't know how to nurture that dream. I turn it into a reality. There are countless people who are nurturing the dream and turning it into reality. There is no ready-made garden, no ready-made utopia. Whoever believes in it is just fool. Utopia has to be built together. And that's the joy. Then we deserve it. There is another story, since, you know. So the story goes that once Mother Diti and Aditi, we know they are sisters, they are married to Kashyap Rishi. And Diti is the mother of division and darkness. Aditi is undivided, illimitable consciousness, infinite consciousness. So Diti tells Shiva, this world is very unfair. God is very unfair. He says, why? See, my children, children of division, they are living in darkness. They are condemned to be asuras, daityas. The right word is daitya, division, Diti's children. But see, Aditi's children, they are all adityas, like gods, they are enjoying the heaven. This is not right. So Shiva says, okay, that's all. He says, I can grant your children also heaven. Oh, you can? Yes, you never asked me. Shiva is Shiva, Bholenath. But he's not so Bhola. When you look at Sri Aurobindo, first impression is Bholenath. And you fall in love with Bholenath. But Bholenath can shake the worlds. So Shiva says, okay, do I have to do something? And no, very simple. I'll manifest Jyotirling and Somnatheshwara, by the way. And all that they need to do is just put some milk or water or honey, something, and they will go to heaven. As simple as that. She is so happy, excited, gives the news to all of them. And there is this on one side, Jyotirlinga has manifested and they are passing on the other side. Gods are very scared. What is going to happen? But nobody can dare stand against Shiva. Devon ke dev, Mahadev. So they are grudging, grumbling. But all of them enter. So they go and tell Shiva, sir, please do something. He said, don't worry. Do you trust that I am wise enough? We trust, but we also know you are naive enough. Here we see your naivety, not your wisdom. Anyways, they go there. First, so wonderful. Heaven is there. We have entered utopia. So what happens next? They have entered utopia. But their nature is the same. So the asura sees Kamadhenu, the cow of plenty, which can give you anything. It's roaming around because in heaven, everybody has their self-discipline. Nobody is there to tell them rules, regulations. So they say, what is this cow? Oh, it gives you whatever you want. Huh? I'll take it to my home. So the other says, how come you? I'll take it to my home. And they begin to fight. Very soon there is a melee. And then they are thrown out. As simple as that. So, even if we enter a ready-made utopia, we have to change our nature to understand what it is. To receive its utopian sense. Utopia is not what our mind imagines. It's something much more, much deeper, much profound. If the mind could imagine utopia and make it, it would have done it long back. Mind doesn't even know what it means for each to live in all and all to live in each. It's just one line in Savitri when Sri Aurobindo describes the new creation. None lived for himself. Mother gives a very interesting, when Dilip Kumar Roy, he thought 1951, maybe mother will ask me to go away because I don't believe in her. But Sri Aurobindo has said, whom I have cherished you as a son and a friend. So he goes to mother and mother knew his thought and she said, you know, everything can continue as it is. Everybody felt like that. Niroda, can I sleep in Sri Aurobindo's room? He said, why not? You continue sleeping in Sri Aurobindo's room. Because he thought, now, you know, I'll be asked to go away unceremoniously. And then she says, we are not here to please others. Very happy. Huh? Then she said, we are not here to please ourselves. We are here to please the Lord. Our utopia is please myself and please others. Live life in comfort zones. See how beautiful it is here. There is neither heat. It's so beautiful, this garden. We don't need an AC. We don't need nothing. Because we are tied with the bond of her love, her sweet love. Otherwise, we would be sweating. So what do we need? We don't need these comfort zones. If they are there, very fine. If they are not there, it's fine. To be in that state of joy which comes from love, from which equanimity becomes natural. See, when people love, how much, to what extent they can go on doing out of love. I have seen mothers do, my God, unimaginably they will do for their child. Struggle, everything, and they do it happily. Why? Because of the child they are doing it. They have this strange capacity. Love can really change our life in so many ways. And when it is love of the divine, even human love can make such a wonderful. So when we use words like renunciation, sacrifice, in our yoga we don't use these big words. Why? Because if you do it with the idea of, oh my God, I have to do this. And we read the story of Auroville when people came. Why they could do all this? Because of love. Love for an ideal. Love for something beautiful that is yet to manifest. And that's another thing we learned from a farmer. Some prepared the soil. Others plant the seed. Still others will water when we take the plant which is on a large scale. And still others will make it, will watch it grow. They will just have, their job is to make sure there is a fence so that animals don't eat when the plant is growing small. And some will enjoy the fruits and the flowers. These sum are an equal sum. And we start looking life like that. The joy of putting the effort. Some will enjoy it. It's okay. Some people are very worried. What will after 300 years, 500 years, supermind, then we won't see. Then, first of all, if you take into consideration the rebirth theory, of course we will see. But even if you don't take that into consideration, so what? You have put your effort into something so beautiful. That life is worth living. Somebody will enjoy the fruits. It's fine. He may not remember. It's perfectly fine. Look how Mother and Sri Aurobindo, what consciousness. Sri Aurobindo himself. Somebody told him that, I believe that the super mind will descend in the playground because I see Mother going there doing a lot of activity. And Sri Aurobindo says, oh, in that case, I won't be able to receive it. Of course, look at it, that there was a... And it's in a way, look at it, like 56, he is not there physically. And look at how they have worked. If you read their life, we will understand how we should be to receive the new creation. She says at the end, how does it matter whether this body or any body or some other body receives and manifests it? All bodies are one body. This is the consciousness in which, you know, when we rise, then life becomes beautiful. Then we are ready for the receiving the new creation. But if we are looking at my own benefits, my own advantages, or we are looking at, my ideas of utopia, my way of life, my way of thinking, it doesn't work out. It's a new creation. How can it be based on anything old? It is something new. Unprecedented, as Mother has said, in the history of Earth. I would like to read a little passage from Mother. Long back, more than 100 years back, she describes what this new creation will be. When she's speaking to some women in Tokyo, and she says so beautifully, we are living in an exceptional time, at an exceptional turning point of the world's history. Truly, I feel we are so privileged. There can be no greater privilege than to participate in a work like this. Success, results don't matter. Of course, we should do for success. But the fact of participating in a venture like this, otherwise, what is there? Ghoda, gadi, bangla, car. I mean, okay. Cars and flats and air conditioned and income tax and people and what is that life? So she says we are living in an exceptional time. It's a turning point. Never before, perhaps, did mankind pass through such a dark period of hatred, bloodshed and confusion. This is around 1918, perhaps. So First World War is going on. Second is yet to come, which was much worse. And at the same time, never had such an ardent hope awakened in the hearts of the people. Where is the new creation being formed? People ask, where is it? Where is it? Show me. See, in the heart of people, in the heart of children, in the heart of humanity aspiring for beauty despite all the ugliness. Look at the tree or plant. It is turned toward the sun. If it looked towards its ground and looked the filth, it would never be able to blossom. It would shrink. It is, as she has said, equal, frank, generous, turned toward the sun, always open to the light. It is not looking at the dirt of things around. This beautiful mother says, my child, I always look upwards towards the sun, towards truth, beauty, goodness. If I look at the ugly things in the world, in fact, at one place he said, if the divine were to see this world even for a moment as human beings see it, it will collapse. So, always to look upward towards beauty, towards light, towards truth. This is called opening towards, and of course, towards her, which combines all this. And this confusion. Now there is a divine confusion. That was a dark confusion. Why the divine confusion? Because supermind is rithchit. It sets the true rhythm. We were leading a life according to false rhythms. Individually, from the point of view of nations. We were living life according to whatever we believed. So we thought it's fine. We built comfort zones. But it is not what is originally intended. So those rhythms are being disturbed because new rhythms have to be set in place. And that is where some follow the new rhythm. Ramnarayanji was just sharing a story. How he ultimately came here. You took that leap of faith and followed that new rhythm. There are many who are unable to take that leap. So this is where we see a confusion that is happening because some are able to take that leap of faith, some are unable to take. But ultimately, everybody, it is going to push in that direction. Indeed, if we listen to our heart's voice, we immediately perceive that we are more or less consciously waiting for a new reign of justice. No truth without justice. That's what we see happening in the Indian setting very clearly. Of beauty, of harmonious goodwill and fraternity. What is the basis of fraternity? It cannot be outer. It cannot be language. It cannot be my region. It cannot be the haves and the have-nots. They always say, haves and the have-nots are not two types of people. They exist within the same person. The have-not is one who is always complaining, grumbling. I don't have, I don't have. Even if you give him a palace, he will grumble because he is a have-not. This is my definition of have-not. Haves may be like Kabir, having nothing. Yet they are full. They feel so rich. They feel so satisfied. So this false doctrine of haves and have-nots outside is not true. Haves and have-nots are inside. There are poor who are haves because they are so deeply contented, joyous. Look at as mother said, Indian peasant, an ordinary Indian peasant. She gave that example. Knows much more, is more, learned than somebody from Europe. And why did she say it? Because somebody passed a comment, oh, these Bhukananga log. But you may be hungry and yet rich. And you may be rich and yet hungry. See, so often the paradox is the richer you become, the more hungry you become. Why? Because it's the abyss. So here she gives us so many clues. So if we look at outside, then we feel darkness. But if we look into the hearts, we will see light being born. It will be born here first. Then it will spread. And this seems in complete contradiction with the actual state of the world. But we all know that never is the night so dark as before the dawn. May not this darkness then be the sign of an approaching dawn? And as never was night so complete, so terrifying, maybe never will dawn have been so bright, so pure, so illuminating as the coming one. After the bad dreams of the night, the world will awaken to a new consciousness. And these nights come in individual and collective lives. As they say, in every Satyug, you have a sub-Kaliyug. And every Kaliyug will have a sub-Satyug. So in every age of truth, there will be a slight sliding back. And that sliding back is simply because you forgot to see something which needed purification. So you go through that process, again you climb towards something greater. Just like in our own life. People feel, oh, now wonderful, I have come to ashram, or life is beautiful. After some time somebody says, oh, you are an idiot and life is so... Night comes again, oh, here also I have to hear this. Or I have never heard this, I have to hear this here. Yes, you have to overcome something. So there is a period. Then again it rises. So there are successive dawns. That's how the Vedic Rishis have described the journey. A successive dawns through which we move. I'll just take 5 more minutes. This after the bad dreams of the night, the world will awaken to a new consciousness. The civilization which is ending now in such a dramatic way was based on the power of mind. Mind dealing with matter and life. If we think by mental ways, by discussions, debate, we can find a solution to life problems, and another 10,000 years we can continue.
We have continued it so far and we see all the TV debates. If it could have been done, it would have been done. In the previous century, so-called age of enlightenment, whatever it meant. And we had, science, industry, reason will make this world the most beautiful. And it ended up with two great wars. Do we still believe that the mind can solve the problems? Well, some believe. It's fine with them. What it has been to the world, we have not to discuss here. But a new rain is coming, that of the spirit, after the human, the divine. There is no way to live this new life without turning to the divine. We can't just detruncate truth. I've been to seminars and all this. They don't want the word divine should not be mentioned. I know even recently in Mumbai, in some university, somebody wanted to send a book, share a book on, it's a story book on Krishna. No, we don't want mention of God here. No, when a world abandons God, abandoning religion is okay, but abandoning God, they're two different things. We know what had happened. Daksha Prajapati story, I'm not going to recount it. Shiva is not welcome because he's too much in freedom and too much in vastness. Daksha wants his settled order. And so Shiva is turned away. The result is a catastrophe. So new creation is not a repetition or a bettering of the old. Yet if we have been fortunate enough to live on earth at such a stupendous, a unique time as this one, is it sufficient to stand and watch the unfolding events? There is a time when we need to take sides. It's very strange. That's what we see Krishna telling Arjun. Arjun says, anyways, your will be fulfilled. No, I want to take sannyas. He says, well, even if you take, your nature will compel you. All those who feel that their heart extends further than the limits of their own person and family, that their thought embraces more than small personal interest and local conventions. All those, in short, who realize that they belong not to themselves or to their family or even to their country, but to God, who manifests himself in all countries through mankind, these indeed know that they must rise and set to work for the sake of humanity, for the advent of the dawn. This is the entry point of Auroville. Minimum. If I want to live for myself, for this or that, we are not even qualified. Just to qualify. We should be willing to live for the divine. And all in a joyous way. Can't use the word giving. Because what can we give? We can only give what fraction of what we have received. That story of Sri Aurobindo that, he says that up till now I feel I have lived like a thief. I have been giving 2 annas to God and keeping the rest 14 annas to myself. This Sri Aurobindo is saying then in Baroda. Whereas actually if you see, even then he used to bring his salary, keep it in the bowl. And the servants would pick up, the helpers would pick up. And somebody told him that, sir, you should, do you really trust them? He says that it knows that people are honest enough because whatever I need is done. Whatever they needed, they could do it. It's not that we should do. I mean, Sri Aurobindo is way beyond and it's a phase. We should take correct account of everything. But look at the vastness and largeness. The idea of the story is not about just keeping money in a bowl. But in living with this idea, this attitude, that all who are there, they are all my brethren. This idea that, no, we are separate, we are different, we are that, this. All this idea. Chote log, small people. See, Sri Aurobindo sees in Alipur jail, Sri Krishna tells him, these people whom your superior pride calls them, small people, chote log. I don't know whether it's the correct Bengali. Chote log means menials. It is these I am raising. I am raising them. He has decided. Because
we are living in that idea of this is not a new elite club. In fact, the more we live this life, the more we embrace mankind. One last little story of how Sri Aurobindo would deal with, that's why I feel it is so important. We read about yoga, we read about, but we should read Sri Aurobindo and the mother's life. It will teach us a lot more about yoga. Of course, from, I must say, authentic source. Very often there is the writing where heart is missing. So you don't read many of the beautiful incidents. One I'll narrate, just one, and I'm not sure how many biographies I mentioned it. This I have read from Amrit Das' account. And the story goes that Sri Aurobindo is living with these few handful of people. And these people who are managing the household, and that time it was so difficult, they didn't know whether night they will get dinner or not. And Sri Aurobindo writes jokingly, I know he will provide, but God has contracted a bad habit of giving at the last moment. And then suddenly they observe the money is missing. Where is it going? Where is it going? So one day they sit on observation. Who is stealing the money? They see the milkman. He comes, sees nobody is around, opens the drawer, picks up the 5 rupee note. That time, it means so much. Pushes back and puts it below under his cap and wears it. And as he's going, all these three people leap upon him. Got it. Got it. Sri Aurobindo is sitting inside in his deep concentration. Suddenly they see he's on the threshold. And all of them are. Amrita says, we felt we have done a mistake. And not he. We felt we are guilty. Not he. When he looked at us. And he just said 4 words and walked back. Let the boy go. Let the boy go. Nothing else. And he walked back. So that vastness, that largeness, that sense of brethren, he is not someone else, but the divine struggling, laboring in this form. All these things come as we open to the new creation. It is not just to break the compartment of countries. That's okay. Nowadays, world over, so people want to have something like Auroville and they bring people from country. It is not about, there was even one false Auroville created by Ram Rahim, who is now in jail. It's not about bringing people from different countries. That is fine. That is one of the important elements because every aspect. It's also about different layers of humanity being represented. How we deal with them. And that's what is the beauty of Auroville. Truly it's the most heterogeneous life. And yet it has one center. And that center is the mother. Matri Mandir. And if we keep that center in our center and see that center in everybody's center, Aura will manifest. And if we see myself, me and myself, and you and yourself, then Aura will take long in manifesting. So thank you so much. And see, gods have been kind. Okay, so I suppose it's okay. No questions, nothing. And I'm fine, either ways.
Somewhere mother says that ashram doesn't have the monopoly of receptivity.
Yes.
And can we also say in the same way the Aurobindians...
Thank you.
...doesn't have that monopoly of...
Nobody upon earth has a monopoly. We should be reminded of Mother's statement. I belong to no nation, no civilization, no country, but only to the divine. Anyone, anywhere in this world who is open to the divine, she gave 2 criteria for receptivity. One, she said, do not cling. Do not cling to past ideas, ways of life, believe, oh, that must, you know, manifest. You may have them or you may be with them, but do not cling. Second is, he said, thirst for progress. Do not cling is the easier part. Thirst, or that also is not so easy. But thirst for progress is the difficult part. See, she gave that for Auroville. Unending progress. Thirst for progress. Not to be satisfied with anything. Position, this, that, anything. So, wherever in the world. And then she says, if you have these two, even the extravagances of an American youth are a path. Somebody asked the mother, mother, shall I stay in the ashram or go to the world? Mother's message was, the world is everywhere and the divine is everywhere. It depends on what you choose. The world is everywhere, the divine is everywhere. Depends on what you choose. Those who choose the divine, wherever they may be. But you have to choose the divine. Then they'll blossom into the new creation. And if you don't choose the divine, if you choose the ego and selfishness and all those narrow little things, mind, you believe in the hegemony of the mind, you'll be hit. No choice.
So that means, can anybody, anywhere in the world, those who have aspiration for the manifestation of the divine, could manifest some aspect of the Auroville?
Some aspect of divine. Why Auroville or ashram? They are special places. But this world is for divine manifestation, in which Auroville and ashram are some very good focal points, without a doubt. Special focal points. But we are here not to manifest Auroville or ashram. We are here to manifest the divine. Auroville is a step towards the divine manifestation. We may be attached to the ashram or Auroville through a collective ego. And Sri Aurobindo has cautioned that in human unity. And he also wrote a letter to that effect. Now I am forgetting. We may start believing, oh, ashram, ashramites, and we form a collective ego. It may equally be true of Auroville. Then we make another country. Like Auroville. We are Aurovillians and we are special elite. No, we are here to manifest the divine. If he puts us in Auroville, we'll manifest it through the ways of Auroville. If ashram, that way. If anywhere in the world. When we are, let's take an example, when as an Aurovillian or ashramite, like I am an ashramite. So if I am traveling out, I travel out. And if I am traveling out in a car or a train or a bus or flight or meeting different people, can I be otherwise? Oh, now I am not in ashram, now I am not in Auroville. My speech, action, everything should manifest the divine. Wherever I may be, whomever I meet, under whatsoever circumstances, that's the great teaching. In everything I must manifest the divine. We are here to manifest the divine. Otherwise we may manifest our own idea of the divine, thinking that, you know, Auroville has said so, and then our mind gives. Somebody told me Auroville about the charter. I said, do you even understand what the charter is? Our mind will form its own ideas, opinions. As I said, it's not just about bringing countries together. So we are here. Or mother has, we is too much to say. She has, for some reason that she knows, picked out some of us from here, there, everywhere to manifest the divine. These some are in Auroville, some in ashram, some would be outside. Regarding ashram, Sri Aurobindo said so. They were disciples outside the ashram. And the mother said that, well, when somebody would ask, say, no, it is better that she is blossoming beautifully outside. If she comes here, she will be besieged with difficulties. This also she has said, because these are special places. In special places, special acts apply. it comes with a rider. Okay, so it is beautiful, you know, as I said, like I am an ashramite, so it's beautiful. But it has come very naturally and organically. But we should be very careful that we don't start creating things like, you know, we may have a Sri Aurobindo center and end up with a meditation and I'm being very forthright, or you have Auroville International and have a party and have a meeting and spend. This is not what we are here for. It's an instrument. Instrument can't be the Lord. This body is an instrument, and every body can be an instrument wherever in this universe. Why limit to this world? If one is open to the divine and has this will to manifest the divine in speech and breath and act and heartbeat and every moment, one is Auroville ashramite, or I would prefer divineite or motherite, as somebody once told me. But wherever we are, we should do that. Yeah. It is Mother's Flower Garden is a very inspiring place. I've been telling people, there are so many gardens we see. Of course, I've been to so many gardens, including Lal Bagh in Bangalore and so called. But for I can't pinpoint, but maybe I can pinpoint also. There's something very special about this place. And one of the things that I feel is that the plants and trees here are very conscious. So when you enter this place, you breathe this atmosphere. I would even suggest that, you know, walking across this place is very rejuvenating. And in fact, I would wish that it really grows. I'm sure it will. And one reason which I can feel is that there is a sense of the psychic touch in those who are working here. And though I really don't know, I just know a couple of names. But there is the sense of the psychic touch that I feel as I walk into this garden. This is the third time I am coming. And wherever I have gone, I have told people about this. And they ask me, where is it? I said, don't ask me that. I know this exists. But I am very poor at directions and all this. So don't ask me where it is. Figure it out. Maybe be drawn by, as you were saying, overpowered by the smell. Being drawn by the psychic sense. I don't know. But it's such a beautiful place. It is anyways co-located with Matri Mandir and all these wonderful. It is indeed Mother's Garden. Name says it all. Okay. Thank you so much.